track 12. For this week's feature item, regular Soundings contributor Liz tells the lifetime story of John Glenn, the pioneering American astronaut and friend of JFK and Bobby Kennedy. He was one of the first seven US astronauts and was the first to orbit the Earth. This is quite a long piece and runs for about 14 minutes, but I think it's absolutely fascinating.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello again, it's Liz from East Kilbride here. A very famous name I've chosen this time. The life of the pioneering American astronaut John Glenn. Now, when we think about NASA and the space race, some of us may feel that that's very much associated with the 1960s. And that's true. But in fact, our John Glenn was very much a product of an earlier era. He was shaped by the Depression years and his wartime experiences, because John Glenn was born in 1921. His father was a plumber. His mother was a teacher in the Midwestern state of Ohio, a very non-military, ordinary, small-town American family. In fact, the stories are such that he had to sell rhubarb going round the local doors and wash cars to gather up enough money to buy a decent bicycle. Now, his upbringing, as I said, was very ordinary. The most momentous aspect of his early school years was meeting Annie Glenn, who was the love of his life. They had met each other in the playpen together, according to the family stories, and they were devoted to each other for a lifelong marriage of amazing achievements. At high school, they both played in different sports teams, and it was clear to John that his path was in the world of science. And he was able to go to college, gather up enough funds for that. But you see, by the time he was entering college, we're looking at the harshness of the Depression years, and we're looking at the oncoming horrors of racism across the world, because we're now into the 1930s. John Glenn actually left college when America joined the war in 1941. He was devoutly devoted to his country. Joining the Air Corps, he moved into the aviation aspects of the Marines and found a talent, a skill, a courage to be the best, be the fastest, be the bravest, perhaps. And by his side, Annie was going to be with him throughout these ordeals of wartime. In fact, John Glenn was a survivor of World War II, finally gathering together over 57 Pacific combat missions. The wartime experience was hugely important in framing his ambitions and his skill. He was already a long-distance flight record holder, but that wasn't enough. So when the war finished, he stayed in the forces, and of course, not many years after that, America was once again fighting a war in Korea. John Glenn again was there at the forefront of the expertise and the flying missions, 63 missions in Korea, a record holder as the first supersonic transcontinental flight. What more could this man do? Well, he could learn about the new machines, learn about the even faster machines. And that path as a test pilot and even an instructor seemed to be his future role in aviation. But then we all remember the shock in America when ding, 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 Sputnik from Russia flew over the United States. There was terror, there was fear, there was an issue. What can America do? The decision was made to create NASA, the National Aeronautical Space Administration, and put the finest human beings into space. And that's the background in the 1950s where we see the plan to select the best people. Now, there's another issue about why didn't they even consider women pilots, but we'll leave that for another talk. So John Glenn, the father of two young children, the devoted father of these children, wanting to not risk their family life, but yet his ambition and his talents were calling him to this next great section of inquiry. They discussed it. Annie would support whatever John wanted to do, and he applied. He applied and eventually was selected as one of the Mercury 7, the first 7 American astronauts. Now, you might think space travel, well, that's quite comfortable, certainly in science fiction. And it's quite comfortable, perhaps even in modern day space shuttles. But I think it's important to realise just how difficult these first Mercury flights were. John Glenn essentially was being strapped into the size of a bathtub. He was then going to be stuck at the top of essentially a stick of dynamite and blasted into space. So the strain on the wives was immense. Annie managed it somehow because John wanted to do it. And it became clear that his task was to make sure these men were perhaps also showing a moral example to the country, because some of the young astronauts, by the time they were selected, I think they were really regarded themselves as rock stars and having a kind of fling as well as a marriage. And John Glenn was having none of this, spoke to them very firmly, and I really don't know if he had much impact. But John and Annie were devoted. There was none of that stuff going on with John Glenn, and the mission, the flights came closer and closer. The first two American astronauts, you don't need to know all their names, but the first two basically went up and came back down again. And that's one reason why John Glenn has stuck in the American consciousness, because he was actually the first American astronaut to orbit the Earth in this primitive Mercury spaceship. So primitive, in fact, that the scientists at NASA were not really sure where he might land, clad in his early spacesuit, a giant aluminium foil effort. Quite scary, in fact. So John Glenn, as he was gathering together what he would take into space in the tiny spaceship, was given a card. And this card, in many languages, said, "Take me to your leader." In case he landed in a remote part of planet Earth and people thought he actually was an alien from outer space. I love that idea. The flight was being planned. The thunderstorms arrived at Cape Canaveral. The flight was delayed. Annie Glenn, sitting at home, worrying hour after hour, was put under pressure to allow the vice president, the strident, powerful Lyndon Baines Johnson, into her house in this agonising build-up. And she refused. And John Glenn supported her because Annie Glenn had a private struggle all her life until much later. She had a very severe stammer. And John knew that Annie was a woman of formidable personal strength, if she just couldn't say very much. The Glenn flight in February 1962 was scheduled to be 7 orbits. In fact, the engineers were concerned he was heating up a bit, and they brought him down after 3 orbits, safely, and then began the razzmatazz, the celebrity years. He met JFK. He met Bobby Kennedy. He went on ticker tape parades. He was a national hero, soon to be an international hero. And in those meetings with the Kennedys began the next great idea of John Glenn's life. Because Bobby Kennedy and JFK both saw him as a future Democratic successful politician. Some aspects of that were destroyed when JFK was shot dead in November 63. John Glenn became a close friend of Bobby Kennedy, and when Bobby Kennedy was shot in 1968, I marvel at the strength of John and Annie Glenn to stay in public life, knowing the definite risks to their personal safety. But that was John Glenn. He was no quitter. He was not going to retreat. Far from it. He was elected for his home state of Ohio and served as a senator for nearly 25 years, devoted to science topics, health topics, the environment, and of course, the clocks were ticking. He was becoming older and he was interested in the whole issue of aging. As he famously said, there is still no cure for the common birthday. When he was much older, in his 50s, he was still working as a senator. And one day a phone rang in their house. He picked up the phone and for the first time in his life, he heard Annie, his wife, speak on the phone. Her stammer had been so severe that she called the phone the instrument of the devil. So when she went on a 3-week course as a last-ditch effort to be cured, it seemed to work. And that gave them great joy in their later life. He was still watching the progress of the space missions, the landing on the moon in 1969, the increasing skill and audacity to take more people up together as the space shuttle missions took their path towards the stars. And he realised in reading some scientific magazines one day that the impact of space travel was very similar to the impact of ageing in terms of weakening your body, in terms of impact on your bone density, even on the health of your blood. So he had the idea, they're doing experiments up in space on ageing, why not send an ageing astronaut? And believe it or not, at the age of 77, John Glenn returned to space. No space tourist. He went up in 1998 on a shuttle mission and conducted experiments on himself, looking forward to greater knowledge because that really was always his ambition, from a humble background to reaching for the stars. I would love to see more, but I think I'm almost out of my allotted time. So just to say that by the end of their lives, this iconic, very devoted couple realised just the journey of their life. And John Glenn, in a later speech, would speak of how he regarded Annie, who had worried with him, survived with him, thrived with him, and eventually overcome her stammer to become an advocate for people with disabilities. He regarded her as the hero of the two of them. But perhaps having listened to me today, you will agree that really John Glenn was a hero also. Thank you so much for listening.
TNF Soundings.